That was amazing. I get one of the short presentations, a couple of minutes, and then I'm going to introduce Mark Crispin Miller. I get to do that. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino. You know me either as a community journalist or as a horoscope columnist. I think it's the same thing. I want to thank ArcLight for being the place where I completely came out of the haze. At an event where Dr. Kaufman met Dr. Cowan, I got to be there for that too. And the amazing part of that is that I had completely unraveled the issues working with a large and qualified team, but still, it wasn't until I was around a bunch of people who were like hugging and kissing and eating food and chowing down and all this stuff, completely unafraid, that I fully grounded in my physical body that there was absolutely no danger right here in this room. So Dale, and among the many people I have met along a very long trail of intentional community and spiritual community, Dale Hartke is able to hold a vibration that is unique in all of the people that I have ever met. He holds a steady, grounded, loving, inclusive, non-judgmental quality, and he's an engineer. So, Dale Hartke, thank you. So, there's something that I keep trying to say, but I have not heard anyone else say this yet besides myself, which is that one of the key components of the disaster that we're living through is the compromise of this thing we call the media. And I'm surprised this is not like the first thing talked about it at every discussion, but it's not. So I'm here to say something about it, which is that none of this would be possible if there were any challenge to this consensus view that has been manufactured. And so you've got an Operation Mockingbird situation going on where you've got almost everyone agreeing, and then you flip on any channel, they're all saying the same thing. I play a little game. I flip on various channels. So first thing, always on, last thing, all, vaccinate. So they're maintaining this consensus, and the way they're doing it is there is really no actual organized alternative media. But what we've seen is a lot of people emerge as grassroots community journalists. I call them kitchen table journalists. And things like Off Guardian, I think, are one of the bright spots in the alternative media in the entire history I've been involved in witnessing and studying. I'm the executive director of a corporation, nonprofit corporation, called Chiron Return, and our role is to train journalists. To train journalists in the art and the tactics and the beauty and the thoroughness and the challenges of journalism, and to train editors and photojournalists, and to provide as well a learning platform where they can work in a structured environment and do stories and be credentialed members of the press, because I issue a press credential. I'm part of Pacifica Radio Network, so I call myself the Rush Limbaugh of the Pacifica Radio Network, because I'm like, well, way on the far right of the Pacifica Network. That is what I do. Today's proceedings are going to be all on planetwaves.fm. So my little contribution back to ArcLight has been to be the kind of house media organ. I maintain my credibility, though. I challenge everyone if I've got an issue with something that they're saying, so don't worry. So planetwaves.fm. I've got flyers explaining my theory of why we must become the media. And this is not about blogging. It's not about sharing to lists. It's not about doing YouTube videos. Journalism is a thing removed from that. It demands a circumspect perspective. It demands depth of knowledge. It demands challenges. It demands having courage. It demands taking shit for your viewpoint, getting fired, deplatformed, called things that you're not. Journalism is I don't want to use a military metaphor, being a Quaker and all that, but there is the First Amendment, and the pen is mightier than the sword. It just has to be. And there you go. That is what I'm doing. So please sign up. Planetwaves.fm is where you'll find this sometime in the next 24 hours. We have our Grateful Dead holiday music special coming up on Wednesday, which I do every year for people stuck at home. I've done a music special. Bob Dylan's organization has let us do it for 3 years. So that's Wednesday night. But sometime tomorrow, by tomorrow night, I'll have all of this stuff up there. Mark Crispin Miller is our next speaker. So Mark is one of these people that I wish I had dreamed up, but he actually existed before I knew he existed. And he's professor of communications at New York University, where my dad got his PhD in communications. The place has changed quite a bit since then. Mark is famously the person who gave his students in a propaganda class. Okay, there's a class. It was required for my dad's PhD, propaganda. And he gave them mask studies and said, decide for yourself what they say. And the shitstorm that ensued is epic. It is historic in the annals of American education, such I cannot even believe that it happened. And then he came on Planet Waves FM, the interview. We go on for about 2 hours. We probably could have gone for two more hours, right on the front page of Planet Waves FM. But now you have him live and in person, Professor Mark Crispin Miller.
All right, thank you. Well, this is this is a heady experience for me. Yesterday I spoke near Columbus Circle, and Naomi was there and Kevin was there. And there were about, I guess I'm told there were about 10,000 people there. And now I'm here. It's very different, it's a lot warmer. But I have to say, all told, it's been really, really amazing to be within the same 2 days together with so many Nazis. Right? You know you're all Nazis, right? Nazis. So how did this happen, right? How did we end up on the far right? And you're on the far right. I mean, I can tell from looking at you that you're on the far right. So I want to take the time allotted to me to offer a few explanations, or let me say, go through some of what I think are the most important reasons why this happened, how this happened. How did it come about that the left has ended up as the bloc most supportive of biofascism? How did this happen, right? So that those of us who actually dare quibble with some of the claims they make or question the policies that they endorse are Nazis. We are Nazis, okay? So I'm gonna come at this through the lens of propaganda study, and there's some history, and some of you will know this history, but the important point to make at the beginning of this discussion is, and this I'm riffing off of something Naomi said, that malevolent thing on top of all this, right, is indeed extremely shrewd and highly sophisticated, and now has the advantage of inconceivably advanced technological and chemical means to do even more effectively what the masters of propaganda have actually been doing winningly since World War I, at least, right? They are light years ahead of us while we were sleeping, right? Or shopping, whatever we were doing, you know? I think they were working toward precisely this. It's been in the works for a very long time. So I just want to, you know, in no particular order, go through some of the things that I think are significant. This is not an exhaustive list. These things are always overdetermined or multifactorial, we might say. all right, first of all, there's Trump, right? And we all know about him. Trump. One of the key, perhaps the key move by them, right, was, and this is going to be a controversial statement, to have either engineered or acquiesced in Trump's election in 2016. I actually think, as someone who studies election results very closely, I actually don't think Trump won that election. And I don't buy the narrative that he was the people's choice and all this. I mean, I'm open to argument always. I could be wrong, but it seems to me that the vote in three of the swing states that he won, he didn't really win. I don't think he expected to win. He was as surprised as anybody else that he won, and it's significant that his team did not have an acceptance speech written, okay? Which is, I think, telling. The reason why I think that this was all preordained is that the propaganda drive equating him with Hitler actually began a month before Election Day, and it was in the New York Times. They got Michiko Kakutani, they wheeled her out of retirement. You know, she was their premier book reviewer for forever. She did a big, prominent review of a new biography of Hitler out of Germany, and the rhetorical trick of the review, some of you may remember it, was to keep intimating that it was actually about Trump without ever mentioning Trump's name, see? So it was a very clever, you know, whoever her case officer is did a great job, you know what I'm saying? Very sophisticated. So that equation started early on, and it culminated in the attempted coup of January 6th, which is laughable. It was a circus. It was manifestly engineered. All you have to do is watch 5 minutes worth of video to see that the whole thing was orchestrated by the cops, the feds, you know. I think it's indisputable, but the fact is all these liberals and progressives are, you know, herniating themselves, screaming in horror at this unspeakable attempted coup, this insurrection, violence, blah, 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 you know. Complete nonsense, but they bought it because they had been conditioned over the years to see Trump as Hitler. Trump as Hitler. This is patently ridiculous. If you read any biography of either one of them, you know, you'll tumble to the fact that that equation is ludicrous, but it has served the crucial purpose of having the entire left hysterically focused on an authoritarian threat over there. See? Biden, or whatever that thing is called, whoever's, you know, let's say Biden. Let's call it Biden, okay? Some dare call it Biden. Biden is he's ruling by decree, right? The governors in the country rule by decree. That's not a threat of authoritarianism. You know, after the attempted coup, which was modeled directly on the Reichstag fire, by the way, after the burning of the Reichstag, they swept up thousands of communists and social democrats and stuck them in prison. Well, they did that here to hundreds of our fellow citizens who are in solitary confinement. They're subjected to routine beatings, medical neglect. How is this okay? Well, it's not fascism. Trump's a fascist. And these people are fat. Do you see? This is crucial. So I think that Trump, the installation of Trump, helped greatly to derange the so-called left. And I think whenever we say left, we have to use air quotes. Okay, now, another important point here, and Kat touched on this, is that the educated, right, the educated, PhDs, the professional classes, don't actually know anything about the real history of this country since World War II or even longer. They are completely uninformed about the so-called deep state and what it's done. They don't know about the CIA's record of destabilizing democratically elected governments. They don't know this. It's an established history. It started in 1953 with Iran, after they had already interfered with the Italian election in 1948. So the stuff that, say, Kat mentions may sound insane. It's likely to sound insane if you don't actually know what they've been up to for decades. You know, the horrendous things they've done, see? So it's crucial to understand that we have to look back at the past and look for that hidden hand in order to see how we got here. So Trump's kind of a short-term thing, right? Now, it's worth noting that starting in the late 60s, and this is the subject of a book that really has yet to be written. I mean, this should be the subject of several books, but the CIA primarily began to depoliticize the left, began to splinter the left by funding, you know, Afrocentrist goons to encourage them to go into, you know, public school systems. I know this happened in Philadelphia, to mount violent attacks on Black Panthers. You know, in other words, they were actually hard at work doing what imperial powers have really always done, which is to shatter the left. This is, you know, you've heard of COINTELPRO, right? This is mainly the FBI, but they were very hard at work trying to destroy potentially effective leftist movements such as the Black Panther Party and so on. They did a similar thing to Progressive Labor, which was making headway on campuses in the 70s. The murder of Fred Hampton in 1969, which was orchestrated by the FBI, because Fred Hampton had made the mistake of organizing Appalachian whites, Hispanic street gangs, and Black street gangs along with the Panthers. So this was serious political organizing with a revolutionary purpose. And I strongly recommend, as I always say, Judas and the Black Messiah. It was nominated for an Oscar. I think it's a miracle it was even made. And it really gets that whole story absolutely right. And who are you exactly? Okay. No, that's okay. All right. So there's this destructive aspect of what they did, but there was also a positive aspect, and that is starting around 1970, the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation, which are both CIA pass-throughs, began focusing their funding resources on academic projects focused on race and gender. See? Not on class, not on political economy. So I think this is the roots of the kind of identitarian tribalism that has long since taken over campus politics, right? This is one of the roots. There are several roots. Now, along the same lines of one of the things that happened in furtherance of the kind of collective unawareness of the so-called left is the refusal to look into JFK's murder in Dallas, to look into the assassination of Martin Luther King, or to reach further back and look into the assassination of Malcolm, or to look into the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. The left has consistently turned a blind eye to this, and I primarily fault Noam Chomsky for this. And Noam Chomsky has lately come under heavy and well-deserved attack for his really vicious statements about the unvaccinated, which are quite shocking. And it's not just once. I know of three times. The most infamous is the latest one where he said, you know, get food? Well, that's their problem. So here I mean, this is really kind of amazing when you look back at Chomsky's whole history, because in many ways, those statements are at odds with much that he always stood for. However, I do think there's something notable about the fact that all the best work that Chomsky did was on issues that matter only to the left. Okay? So East Timor, things like that, you know, get all worked up and do great research on it, right? But when it comes to the murder of a president, effectively at high noon, right, which was a coup, it was a major coup. In fact, it was the moment at which we started heading toward year COVID. I think it really sort of starts there, right? He just laughs this off. He even goes so far as to say, well, it might have been a conspiracy. Who cares, he actually said. He said, people get murdered every day. What difference does it make if it's the president of the United States, right? Oh, seriously? Meanwhile, I have a copy of a book called The Assassination of Fred Hampton by one of the lawyers representing Hampton's family. Excellent book. It's got a blurb on the front cover by who? Noam Chomsky. So apparently that's a murder that does matter, right? Because Fred Hampton's murder matters only to the left. So my reading of all this is that Chomsky has played a key role and helping lead the left away from scandals that could conceivably have sparked mass resistance. Because I don't just mean those assassinations, I also mean 9/11. And I also mean the thefts of the 2000 and 2004 elections, about which I argued with him by email, and you can't argue with Chomsky, you know. As I've said before, he argues by levitation. You know, you say, well, this and this and this, and he just sort of rises 6 feet into the air. It's, well, you're just stupid. You just don't understand what you read, you know. Nobody I know at MIT says that, you know. Okay, thank you. At any rate, this blackout has had really kind of incapacitating consequences, because if you don't know the history of state crimes against democracy, but this is from Lance DeHaven's great book, Conspiracy Theory in America. Those things that are called conspiracy theories are precisely those crimes, state crimes against democracy. And not to know about those as state crimes against democracy, to believe the cover story, is to be thrust into the midst of this nightmare unarmed and unprepared and, you know, dangerously sentimental about the nature of authority. Dangerously sentimental. They wouldn't do that, right? They wouldn't actually deliberately murder all these people. They wouldn't deliberately sterilize all these children. Yeah? Really? So look what they have done in the past, right? Then they managed to kill 3,000 people in New York on 9/11, right? Without turning a hair. Okay, well, I don't want to get off on this tangent here. There's a couple more things, and one of them relates directly to this project of depopulation, which is what this is, right? And really, it takes tremendous effort of will not to see that Bill Gates et al. Are and always have been obsessed with, well, let's call it what it is. It's eugenics. It's a form of eugenics. The history of eugenics, you know, selective breeding, and preventing the unfit from procreating, that's another history that's been buried. It's never taught in schools. The media stays away from it. But it is also crucial to understanding how we got where we are now and how the left came to be on the wrong side very quickly. Eugenics really began in the late 19th century, funded by the Rockefellers and Andrew Carnegie's family and the Harrimans. It was an elite project. And they funded it not only in the US and in Britain, but in Germany. You know, Adolf Hitler was an avid student of American eugenics. And when he was appointed chancellor, all the eugenics publications jubilated. They were delighted that finally there was a head of state who understands our science, they said, flattering themselves. It's not really a science. It's a kind of racist ideology, right? And a project for killing people off, right? That's what it was. So they were happy. Then there was the Holocaust. Oops. Oh my God. Well, that doesn't look so good, right? The footage of all these skeletal figures in the pajamas, so they kind of went underground. They went underground and they reemerged in 1952 on Rockefeller's dime as the Population Council. See? And then, starting in the 60s, and this is the left turn that it takes, eugenics becomes green. It is greened. It is increasingly a matter of saving the planet. So if you look at The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich, it's a big bestseller, 67 or 68. It's all about saving the planet. Now, the book begins with this horrified description of a trip that Ehrlich and his wife took to New Delhi. And he's describing all these Indians all over the place, you know, hanging off the transports and infesting alleyways, you know. It's just kind of embarrassingly racist, right? That's what it's really about. It's really about all that. It's about getting rid of the unfit, right? But it takes on a green mantle. And also, the environmental movement, there's a strain of the environmental movement that comes out of the elites. The elites really want to save the planet for themselves, right? And that's what Extinction Rebellion is all about. That's what Greta Thunberg is all about. you know, they get, it gets lots of traction in the media, the demonstrations get tons of sympathetic coverage, and it, you don't have to dig too deep to see that the guiding notion of these environmentalist movements is that humanity is the gravest pollutant of them all. Humankind is a kind, it's a kind of filth, it's a kind, you know, vermin. That's what's wrong. Too many African women having babies. You know, not multi-billionaires with six mansions and flying everywhere on private planes. Not the US military, right? Biggest polluter on the planet. No, it's people living in villages all over Africa, right? So that, you know, the left is now all completely, completely into the whole climate change thing, which I had to go through a thing with this myself. I don't stand here pretending always to have seen through everything that happened, because I did not. I was really worried about the planet. You know, I saw an inconvenient truth. I saw the piles of journals, and it was very slickly done, you know. It wasn't until I actually started studying the different propaganda memes used to drive this home, you know, like the hockey stick graph. You know the hockey stick graph that the planet Earth's temperature was like this until the 20th century, and then it shoots up like this. It's gravely flawed. It's been debunked for real by many mathematicians. And Michael Mann, the chief scientist behind that graph, was ordered in court to present his raw data. He could not, and he did not. Okay, that tells me that graph is bullshit. But it wasn't just this graph. It was a graph that the UN used to, you know, push all these policies, right? The polar bears, I'm pleased to say, this is actually good news, are thriving, right? And the world's leading authority on polar bears, and I'm blanking on her name, she came out with a book saying, hey, good news, the polar bears are all fine. And she lost her teaching position. See, I could go on with other examples like this, but you don't, you know, unlike real science, which is all about challenging theses and so on, when you're dealing with propaganda, we don't want any challenges at all, right? So, just to review, I've gone through the CIA's depoliticization and balkanization of the left, the encouragement of identity politics, the left's turning a deaf ear and a blind eye to all the evidence of grievous state crimes against democracy since World War II. I've talked about the history of eugenics and how it put on a green mantle. And finally, I want to talk about, just for a minute, about HIV/AIDS, which was actually sort of a dress rehearsal for this. Because the notion that you could have this fatal illness and not know it, right? And that you really must take this toxic medication if you know what's good for you. And it was AZT back then. Now it's these so-called vaccines. The notion of a disease so lethal that it should actually prevent you from, congregating is putting it a bit prissily, but any sexual contact is like a death sentence, right? Screwing is gonna kill you. So, I think this is all sort of culminated in that cover photo on Vogue last year showing these two gorgeous models, male and female, in a rapturous kiss, but they both got masks on. You know, this is psychotic, okay? But it starts with HIV/AIDS. And where does the left come in? Well, Fauci benefited from, I think, the tactical use of ACT UP to pressure the FDA into gutting its until then meticulous drug approval process. This is a, people are dying, people are dying. Silence equals death. You wanna kill more gay men? So they said, all right, here's your drug, you know, which then killed 300,000 gay men. I believe that most of the highest profile deaths by AIDS we can remember from Rudolf Nureyev, Keith Haring, they were all killed by AZT, right? So, I mean, this is a very important moment, again, contributing to this unholy union of woke elements with the globalist elite's intentions, right? So indeed, and then any of us who really were on the real left because we were against the war, we were for civil rights, we supported the working class, you know, all those things that we did. We were certainly opposed to censorship. We hailed the ACLU for defending the right of Nazis to march in Skokie. We liked Lenny Bruce, right? So how could we help but be utterly repelled and disgusted by what the left has become? How can we? They are the enemy. And I try to say this without too much anger, right? Because I'm going to be perfectly honest, there are also things that I have learned, ways in which I've changed since this whole thing started. As someone who has identified as being on the left, I did not sufficiently value freedom. I admit this, right? I mean, without freedom, there's nothing. I didn't appreciate the value of national sovereignty and states' rights, okay? Very, very important when you're under globalist attack by an elite that sees China as the ideal society, which they do, okay? And I didn't appreciate the importance of a family. Oh, now I'm really sounding right-wing, aren't I? He's gone totally Nazi. The Nazis applauded him. Those Nazis. Yeah, because, you know, every totalitarian movement takes the children away. I'm almost done. And severs the bond between parent and child. And there's, you know, they want children to be trafficable, you know. They are trying to normalize pedophilia, and they want to destroy informed consent because they want these kids to get injected with these toxins, which will sterilize them, right? Too horrible for words, right? Okay, so the last thing that I didn't appreciate that I do now is the spirit, okay? This is evil. This is evil, okay? And you may respond to this however you like. As for myself, I've realized that if there is evil, and evil is struggling as evil is doing now to do what it's doing, that's because it's struggling against something, right? And it's in the name of that that I've changed my thinking, right? The word religious seems to me crude and imprecise, but I think we can't survive without that. Without honoring God's creation, right? What a bunch of Nazis. Although the Nazis, of course, well, I mean, that's very complicated. They claim to be hostile to the Judeo-Christian tradition, but, you know, Hitler believed in something he called providence. Who knows? The fact is that, you know, if your mind is open and not a dead thing, you know, and it's not closed as tightly as a young oyster, you will change your views, no matter how old you are, over time. I've always tried to do it. I believe that you have all done it, and I think more of us will have to do it, because we will indeed have to continue making common cause with people we once assumed we had nothing in common with. Now we have everything in common with them. We have to join forces with them. We have to work with whatever's left of the institutions that haven't been completely gutted, but I believe we're going to have to make the whole world over again, right? Medicine, journalism, academia, we have to start over again. And I believe, to sound a positive note, that we can and will win. Thank you.